Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Some Kind of Happiness by Claire LeGrand. Narrated by Tina Wollstonecroft. Once there was a great sprawling forest called the Everwood. Magic lived there, and it lit up every tree and flower with impossible beauty. But even so, most people stayed far away from the Everwood, for it was said to hold many secrets, and not all of them kind. According to rumor, the Everwood was home to astonishing creatures and peculiar solitary people. Some were born in the Everwood, and some had wandered inside, whether they meant to or not. No one in the Everwood got along, for they had no ruler to unite them, no neighborhoods or cities. They lived like wild things and kept to themselves, but they all loved the Everwood and its strangeness with their whole hearts, for it was their home and it was all they knew. Or so the rumors said. Most people were afraid to enter the Everwood, but some brave souls made the journey anyway. Adventurers, witches, explorers. They never returned. Perhaps the wild creatures who lived in the forest had trapped them there. Or maybe the Everwood's secrets were so enchanting that those who made it inside did not care to leave. Everyone who lived near the Everwood knew that it was home to two guardians. They were as ancient as the Everwood trees, and they protected the forest's secrets from outsiders. Throughout their long lives, the guardians had learned how to read certain signs. The wind in the trees, the chatter of the Everwood creatures. One summer, not so long ago, something happened that would change the Everwood forever. The ancient guardians determined that soon a terrible Everwood secret, one they had kept hidden for years, would come to light. And if this happened, the guardians feared, the Everwood would fall. They would no longer be able to protect their forest. Its secrets and treasures would be laid bare. The people of the Everwood would lose the home they so loved and be forced out into the cold, wide world. So the guardians studied their signs, desperate for hope, and they found it. A small, cautious hope, as clear to them as though it were a page in a book. The Everwood might fall, but it could still be saved even then. The trees whispered it, the birds sang it. A fall does not have to be forever. All they would need to save the Everwood, said the guardian's signs, was a queen. 1. Why this summer will be the most terrible of my life. I will be spending the entire summer at Hart House with my estranged grandparents. Estranged, 9-letter word for kept at a distance. My cousins will be there too, off and on. That's what Mom and Dad tell me. Oh, they pop in and out, Grandma says. I hate when people pop in and out. Popping in and out is not very list-friendly behavior. Mom and Dad are taking me to Hart House because they are having problems and need some space to work it out. This, I assume, is a euphemism for divorce, or at least something leading up to divorce. Euphemism, 9-letter word for term or phrase seemingly innocuous. I will be far away from my bedroom at home, which is the only place where I can be entirely myself. There is a heaviness pressing down on me that makes it difficult to breathe. It's true. I am finding it difficult to breathe. A heavy feeling inside my chest squeezes and pulls. I rest my head against the car window and watch the world outside race by. pale green prairie grass and the wide blue sky. Old barns with peeling paint and lonely houses surrounded by cows instead of neighborhoods. I imagine I am running through the tall grass alongside the car. No, I am on a horse, a white horse with a tail like a banner, a horse from the Everwood. Nothing is fast enough to touch us. Mom is obsessively switching radio stations. I think she probably has ADHD, which is a term I have learned from listening to kids at school. Mom has a hard time sitting still and is never satisfied with a radio station for longer than the duration of one song. Her work as an interior designer is perfect for her. It keeps her hands busy. Dad is talking about things that don't matter.
I wonder if this summer will be hotter than last summer. What's a seven-letter word for side-splitting? I'm not sure I can get behind the new tone of this station.
They like to pretend I don't sense the stiffness between them, that I don't notice how much more they've been working lately, even more than usual. They like to pretend I don't notice things. I think it makes them feel better, to lie to themselves and to me, which is kind of insulting. I may be a lot of things, but I am not stupid. For example, I recognize how strange it is that I have never met my grandparents. I do know Mom's parents and her brother, though they live so far away that I hardly ever see them, and they might as well be strangers. But when I ask about Dad's parents, Grandma and Grandpa Hart, Mom and Dad fumble with their words, offering explanations that don't explain anything much.
Well, Grandma and Grandpa are always so busy. It's a matter of scheduling.
We're always so busy, your dad and I. You know that, Finley.
I don't know, Finn,
Dad often tells me.
Your grandparents and I, we've never been close.
Through my observation of the world, I have concluded it is not normal for a girl to be kept away from her grandparents, her aunts and uncles, her cousins, as if they could hurt her. Testing myself, I inhale slowly. The heaviness inside me has faded. I can breathe again. I glance at the back of Dad's head, at Mom's eyes in the rearview mirror. She must be nervous. She has never met Dad's family either. She is staring hard at the road, sitting perfectly straight, not paying attention to me. So she and Dad didn't notice a thing. Good. I am safe. For now. I will not think about Hart House, or about how my cousins will stare at me, or about pretending it isn't weird to spend a summer with my grandparents after years of not knowing them. No, it isn't weird at all. I cannot keep thinking about these things. That is a recipe for disaster. I check the reflection of Mom's eyes. Still glaring at the road, Mom? Yes, good. I am safe. I flip past my pages of lists into the portion of my notebook reserved for stories about the Everwood. I don't know what I will write about today. Perhaps about the Everwood's evil cousin forest, the Neverwood, and their terrible thousand-year war. Or maybe about the various Everwood witch clans and how people say you can tell them apart by the smell of their magic. Rhonda, my next-door neighbor, and probably the closest thing I will ever have to a best friend, says I am a huge nerd. She is probably right. Given my father's love of crossword puzzles, his job as a literature professor at the university, and my preference for books over people, I have acquired an impressive vocabulary for an 11-year-old. But when my parents sat me down to explain where I'd be going this summer and why, all the words seemed to fly right out of my head. I hope I can find them again soon. My notebook, the latest in a series of 12, has loads of blank pages in it waiting to be filled. And if I'm going to keep my grandparents from discovering my secret, I will need to write a lot.
She is coming.
She is coming.
It was the beginning of summer. There were soft breezes in the air, and the Everwood was using them to speak. The ancient guardians used spells and charms to weave a golden cage around the secret at the heart of the Everwood. But still, the secret grew and darkened deep underground. It reached for the roots of the great Everwood trees like poison. Some day it would rise. Some day soon it would escape. But those who lived in the Everwood, the witches and the goblins, the barrows and the fairies and the wood spirits, knew nothing of this. They turned their faces to the trees and listened, as they did every day. Today, the message was different.
"She is coming,"
whistled the Everwood winds.
"She is coming,"
rustled the Everwood leaves.
"Who?" the creatures of the forest asked. "Who is coming?"
"The little orphan girl,"
groaned the trees.
"She carries a great sadness inside her. We must put our hope in her, nevertheless."
And the guardian stood at the edge of the wood and gazed into the sun, waiting. 2. When we make our way down Brightfall Lane and Hart House comes into view, I see a curtain fall over Dad's face, closing him away from me. He is driving now. Mom switched with him at a gas station at the edge of Billington, where Grandma and Grandpa Hart live. Dad told her outside while he filled up the car.
"I want to be the one to drive up to their door. I don't know. It feels like it ought to be me."
"I don't understand why that's such a big deal." Hart House is enormous and white. The largest house I have ever seen in real life. Hidden by a sea of green leaves, it sits back from the road, the only house at the end of a long driveway lined with trees. Our car and this house and these trees feel like the only things left in the world. For the next 2.5 months, this will be my world. "I want to leave," I try to say, but my voice doesn't seem to be working. As we drive up to the house, we see Grandma standing on the wraparound front porch beside a column, waving. Dad squares his shoulders and plasters on a smile. Mom does the same thing, straightens her blouse, puts her chin up and her shoulders back. I hope I am not so obvious when I try to hide myself. I want to tell them about the stones piling up in my stomach, that my thoughts are tangled and wordless. My brain does not like being brought here against my will. It is shouting at me to make Mom and Dad turn the car around. Grandma Hart steps out the front door onto the porch. Dad shifts the car into park, his hands grip on the steering wheel.
"It'll be okay, Lewis,"
Mom says quietly.
"You're doing the right thing."
Does she think I can't hear her? What will be okay? What right thing? My chest is knotted up. I feel like a person standing in the middle of a crowded street. The person is screaming, but nothing is coming out, and no one's paying attention anyway. Grandma stands there, on that porch the size of our apartment, holding up a picture. Everything looks like a painting. Blue sky, white house, bright flowers. How can the world look so perfect when I feel so broken? There are so many of them. A swarm of hearts. They all have their own faces, but each face has a piece of me inside it. Almost everyone's hair is thin and blonde, like mine, but none of them have Mom's freckles, like I do.
I catalog as much information as I can while Grandma gives me and my parents a tour of the house. 7 bedrooms, 5 bathrooms, 2 living rooms, a dining room, a parlor, a kitchen, a sunroom, a rec room, a dark study with glass doors. This is Grandpa's private space. Children aren't allowed inside unless Grandpa says so. I am used to an apartment in the city. This house is a planet. I hear whispers, bare feet slapping on wood floors, bodies moving throughout the house. Some of my cousins are following us. Some of them scamper away, and others take their place. I see adult women, my 3 aunts. There are smiles and hugs that are honestly painful to me because I'm not accustomed to strangers invading my personal space. The hearts are a storm, and I am its bewildered eye. I wonder what they are saying about me. I feel like I'm being dragged through a funhouse mirror maze that reflects distorted versions of myself. I see 2 little kids, much younger than me, a girl my age, another one a little older, and a teenage girl. The teenager is inside a bedroom, lying on her bed, playing on her phone. She glances up as we pass her open door. Her hair is a waterfall of gold, rushing over the side of her bed. She looks irritated that we've disturbed her peace and quiet. She does not get up.
"And this is where you'll be staying, Finley,"
says Grandma, opening a heavy white door.
"This is your father's old room. We don't use it much."
"It's lovely, Candace," says my mother. I can see her work self take over. "Gwen Hart of Gwen Hart Designs, your one-stop renovation destination." Mom silently critiques the paint colors, the fabric choices, the arrangement of the furniture. Over the bed hangs a miniature chandelier made of crystal and dark brass. Against one wall stand shelves full of books, organized in alphabetical order by author. The curtains are lace and the rug is white. The wrinkle between Mom's eyebrows vanishes. She approves. I wish the wrinkles inside me could disappear so easily.
"It looks so different,"
Dad says quietly. Grandma fluffs a pillow, not looking at him.
"I redecorated some time ago. I didn't think you'd mind. We weren't sure you'd ever come back, so I thought, what did it matter?"
Dad rubs the back of his head and says nothing. The room is full of secrets. On Dad's face, hanging in the air like clouds of dust. But I don't know how to read them. Dad looks smaller than he ever has before.
"Don't you think this is a beautiful room, Finley?"
Mom's eyes are wide.
"Say something nice, quick."
"Yes, it's exquisite. 9-letter word for mighty fine." I try to smile, but it feels all wrong. Like someone else's smile is being sewn onto my face. "Thank you." Grandma's smile has been plucked from the pages of a magazine. She could be an actress. A ballerina in silk and pearls with piles of soft white hair. 4 of my cousins hover at the door. The girls around my age, the 2 little ones. I feel like a creature at the zoo being gawked at. I roll my notebook into a spyglass.
"Kennedy,"
says Grandma to the oldest girl,
"why don't you come say hello to your cousin? Where are your manners?"
"Hi, Finley." Kennedy wraps me in a hug. She is tan and blonde and perfect. She looks like she has leaped right out of the ocean. She smells like vanilla.
"I'm so excited to finally meet you,"
she turns to the other kids. "We all are." I am probably supposed to say something, but all I can think about are these 5 pairs of strange eyes staring at me. This house that smells different from mine and is far, far too big. Mom and Dad will be gone soon. They are going to leave me. My brain has yet to stop screaming, It bashes against the walls of my head in protest. I can't help it. I start to cry. Not loudly or anything. I am not one for fits. One minute I am not crying, and the next minute tears are sliding down my face. And I wish they weren't, but I can't stop them. And that makes me cry even harder. I don't want to be here. This place is all wrong. Grandma's mouth goes thin. She turns away from me.
I'll go put on some tea.
Dad says,
she's just overwhelmed. This is all new for her.
Yes, says Grandma.
I suppose it would be. Tea is the thing. We'll have tea and get her washed up.
I hear my cousins.
Is she all right?
What's wrong? Why is she crying?
Grandma.
She's only tired. Come now. Don't stare.
I am sitting on my bed, and Mom is holding me, telling me things. Please stop crying, sweetie. Please.
The summer will be over before you know it, and then we'll be back to get you.
You have to be brave. This will be fun, I promise. She pries my rolled-up notebook from my fingers. After a while, I appear to have cried myself out. My head is so heavy, I can't lift it from the pillows on this bed that is not mine. The room is empty except for me and Mom. She kisses my forehead and tells me I should come down soon. She and Dad can't stay long. The longer they stay, she tells me, the harder it will be for her to leave me. And this is the right thing to do, she says. She and Dad have decided it will be good for me to spend time with my family. I think she sounds like she has been crying too, but I don't want to know if that's true. Once she leaves the room, I lie flat and stare at the chandelier above my bed. This is a room for a princess, and I am anything but that. What am I? A lump of heaviness? A stranger? A thing that does not fit? I can't seem to stop the poison inside me from spreading. I mean, I've never been poisoned, so I'm only speculating. But I do feel something spreading inside me. Something heavy and dark. I can't let them see it. They can't know my secret. Not these people in this clean white palace. Not even Mom and Dad know. And they never will. Later, Dad comes in and hugs me.
We'll talk every day,
he tells me.
I love you.
He and Mom are leaving now. No, they cannot stay for dinner. Yes, they love me. Forever. A few minutes later, I hear voices drifting up beneath my window and get up to look outside. My parents and grandparents are standing by the sidewalk that leads to the driveway. Dad tells Grandma,
Finley likes her space.
He speaks quietly, but I am good at listening.
She's a dreamer. She loves to write. Just don't push her.
Grandma's chin is square.
I think I'm used to taking care of grandchildren by now, Lewis.
Dad hugs Grandpa, who claps him on the back. Grandpa says,
It was good to see you. You look good. You look tall.
Dad clears his throat.
Yeah, you too.
Dad and Grandma do not hug. She tells him to drive safely. Then Mom and Dad get into the car and drive away. I watch them until the trees swallow them up. I am alone. I wipe my face with tissues I find on my nightstand, unroll my notebook, and begin to write. The Everwood won't leave me. The Everwood is always right here in my notebook on these straight lines. The Everwood is one thing I can always understand. 3. At home, dinner is typically a haphazard affair. Mom camps out at the kitchen table, scarfs down her food in 5 minutes, and spends the rest of the night poring over some client's renovation blueprints. Dad sits at his desk in the corner of the living room to work on lesson plans, or write the novel he'll never finish because he gets distracted too easily. Every now and then, he'll take a bite of food. Mom inhales, Dad pecks. I sit on the couch with my TV tray and my homework, usually with some kind of nature documentary on in the background. Dad says the narration soothes him and helps clear his mind. Some people might think it's odd that we hardly ever eat dinner together at the table. I like our way, though. It makes me feel grown up, like Mom and Dad don't have to pretend to care about typical dinner time rituals. We're all adults here. We eat how we want to eat. But dinner at Hart House is like a dance. Not only do I not know the steps, but I seem to have forgotten how to move my legs entirely. All 12 of us sit around the polished dining room table. The room is full of glass. There is a sparkling chandelier. Old-fashioned music plays from a long, skinny stereo on a side table. Even though the stereo looks new, the music crackles and pops. My aunts bring in dishes, serve drinks. I have a list of the Harts in my notebook. For a couple of days, I have studied their names and the photographs Dad gave to me. Grandpa sent them in an email. Obviously, it is beyond strange to not have photographs of one's own family. When I asked Dad about this, he rubbed his head and said, "Finn, it's complicated." Whatever that means. My aunts whisper to one another as they set out silverware. "I can't believe they didn't stay for dinner," says one of them. Her face is soft, and she keeps looking at me like she is terrified I might start crying again. "Aunt Deirdre, D for short," Dad said.
"I'm not surprised,"
hisses another one of my aunts, thin and sharp all over. Her shiny blonde hair is pulled back into a tight bun.
"I am surprised they actually showed up."
"Aunt Bridget. I must never call her anything but Aunt Bridget.
Certainly not Bridge."
In real life, she looks even scarier than her photograph. Dad said Aunt Bridget kept her last name instead of taking Uncle Reed's, which I think is pretty wonderful. I wouldn't want to give up my last name. But I am not going to tell Aunt Bridget that. I'm not sure I'll say anything at all to her, in fact. She reminds me of a beautiful bird you would want to pet if you weren't afraid it might peck out your eyes.
"Stop it,"
says my third aunt, Aunt Amelia. Long, tan legs and arms, lots of teeth. She is a runner, always has been. Everyone calls her Stick.
"Not in front of Finley."
I inspect my napkin like it is the most interesting thing in the world.
"Girls,"
Grandpa says to my aunts, folding his napkin into his lap.
"Don't cause trouble. Bridget Lynn, that means you."
Aunt Bridget frowns, sits, takes a gulp of her drink. The ice cubes clink against the glass. Grandpa's chair is at the head of the table. He has a lot of hair, combed into stiff silver waves. When he catches me staring at him, he winks. He is not very good at it. Everyone is looking at me now, which makes me want to slither under the table and eat on the floor. But I think that is probably not allowed here. Focus, Finley. I must think of my list. Aunt Bridget is married to Uncle Reed, who isn't here. He's hardly ever around, Dad said, because Uncle Reed took over Grandpa's business, which is basically about buying and selling companies, and sounds to me like the most boring thing imaginable. One of Aunt Bridget's 8-year-old twins shrieks, Dex, the boy.
"Ruth!"
Aunt Bridget snaps.
"Stop shaking pepper on your brother!"
"But Mom, he's been poisoned! This is the cure! He has to sneeze it out!"
Ruth's shouting makes me nervous. I wish my notebook weren't all the way up in my room. I wish I were home. I wish. Focus. Aunt Dee is married to Uncle Nelson, who drawls his words and looks like a cowboy without a horse. They have two kids. Kennedy, 12 years old, the girl who looks like she belongs on a beach somewhere. Avery, 17 years old. The girl I saw playing on her phone. The girl so pretty she doesn't look real. Then there's Aunt Amelia.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?